fishing when you need to be helping us in the harvest. And the man says, well, I've helped with the harvest for years. He says, but I've become so feeble in my body that I can't do the harvest anymore. But I can fish. And so I get up early in the morning and I go fishing. And whatever fish I catch, I come back that evening and I share that with the ones who have been out harvesting all day. And this is my contribution to the community and to what we're trying to do with harvest. And because of his conviction that he had made such a wrong assumption, he called this hill Rash Judgment Point. Well, I think that all of us have been like this man. We can all make rash judgments at times. In our story of Joshua 22, when the children of Israel have conquered the land and now they're going to be settling into the land, is a good illustration of a rash judgment and of our need to talk to one another. Look at the map here to help us better understand. Because we think about Israel as being this side west of the Jordan River. This is the main land of Israel. But over here on the east of the Jordan River, when they were coming into the land, 2.5 tribes saw that this land was good for pasture, and they wanted to settle the land. And Moses made an agreement with them that they could settle these lands as long as they will go on into the land of Canaan and help their brethren conquer. That's when Moses made that famous statement, "Shall your brethren go to war while you sit here idly?" And the answer was, no, you've got to go fight with us. So now 40,000 men of these 2.5 tribes have gone and they have spent 7 years conquering the land of Canaan. And now they have finished that. And they're now returning back to their homes, to their family, here on the east side of the Jordan River. And that's what our story is about. It's about these tribes who are going back to this east side of the river. And let's note, first of all, that they're going to be receiving a compliment. Look at verse number 1, chapter 22. Joshua summoned the Reubenites and the Gadites and half the tribe of Manasseh. That's these 2.5 tribes who are going back to this east side of the river. And he says, you have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, have obeyed my voice in all that I have commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days, down to this day, but have been careful to keep the charge of the Lord your God. Now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers, as he promised them. Therefore turn and go to your tents in the land where your possession lies, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the river. Only be careful to observe the commandments of the law that the Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God with and walk in all his ways, keep his commandments, and to cling to him, and serve him with all your heart, and with all your soul. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Notice that Joshua begins by giving these tribes a great compliment. We need to be willing to compliment brethren for their good works. If you look in this text, you notice that in verse 2, Joshua compliments them because they were obedient. In verse 3, he compliments them because they were loyal to brethren. In verse 3, they were faithful to the charge of the Lord. In verse 6, they are blessed by Joshua. Think about those things. These brethren had spent some 7 years over helping clear the land of Canaan. They had risked their own life. They were obedient. They were faithful. They were loyal. In fact, in verses 6 through 9, you can continue to read. And because of that, Joshua says you're going to be given a reward. He says in verse number 8, go back to your tents with much wealth, with very much livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, with much clothing, divide the spoil of your enemies with your brothers. So they received a lot of spoil from all this conquering they have done as well. Joshua gave them a great compliment for their service. There's much to be said for complimenting one another, for encouraging one another. When you think about it, it's so easy to be critical of God's people. It's easy to be critical of the church. Think about what the church is not doing or what the church should do. It's easy to be critical of the preacher or the elders or a deacon or maybe a Bible class teacher. It's easy to find fault. But you know what? It's much better to find positive things and to be complimentary. And we need to, at times, deal with issues, and we certainly want to improve. But also, we need to understand that there's a great blessing that comes from complimenting loyal, faithful brethren. Sometimes we can get where we focus so much on the negative, and we want to always be after and encouraging and trying to win the lost or win the wayward, that maybe we neglect the faithful and the loyal and don't appreciate and compliment. And so let me encourage you, whether it's our elders, who many of them have served for years, have you complimented and encouraged them? Or a Bible class teacher, maybe who's just starting out, maybe it's their first quarter to teach, and they have a lot of nerves and they're anxious about it. Compliment them and appreciate them for what they're trying to do. Let's be complimentary. And let's look for positives. When I think about our congregation, we have a lot of positive things. Just a few weeks ago, it was incredible the amount of money that we have given to El Salvador Project and the support that was given to that team and the water filters that have been raised. And then you think about the team that's going to be leaving. And then we just had the We Are the Sermon Day a few weeks ago and all the compliments I heard from people who we served appreciating what we did. And now, even in a couple weeks, we're going to do it again. So there's a lot of positive things going on. Let's be complimentary of these things. Brethren, we need to be willing to compliment. But then notice, the story doesn't end with the compliment. It's going to also have a little conflict. So verses 10 and following, these tribes are going back. And as they're going back, verse 10 says that they built there an altar by the Jordan. An altar, the ESV version says, of imposing size. An altar of imposing size. In other words, it's pretty big. We don't know how big it is, but it was big enough that you could see it well from the other side of the river, and you could see it from the surrounding area. The people of Israel heard it, and they said, "Behold, the people of Reuben and the people of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh have built the altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan, in the region above the Jordan, on the side that belongs to the people of Israel." They built it on the western side. "And when the people of Israel heard of it, the whole assembly of the people of Israel gathered at Shiloh to make war against them." They gathered to make war against them. They thought, this is a breach of faith. Continuing on in verse 13, "The people of Israel sent Phinehas to them." Now, Phinehas had been involved earlier in stopping a plague, and he's known for his righteousness as a priest. And they send him to talk to them. And he's going to tell them, down in verse number 16, "What is this breach of faith that you have committed against the God of Israel in turning away this day from following the Lord by building yourselves an altar this day in rebellion against the Lord?" They believed that they were building this altar to offer their own sacrifices on it. You see, what they're saying is, what hurts one will hurt us all. What hurts one will hurt us all. You see, they believe that they are going into apostasy from the Lord God. That they're saying they're going to build their own altar. They're not going to go down to Jerusalem into the tabernacle. But rather, they're going to worship here in this place. And they know that that will cause the wrath of God to come upon them. In fact, they use two illustrations. They talk about the sins of Peor. This is when they had committed a sin earlier, when many of the children of Israel got carried away by marrying Midian women and worshiping the gods of the Midianites. And because of that, God sent a plague that killed 24,000 people. And Phinehas had to step in and stop it. And then he mentions later on at the end of this text, the sin of Achan. The sin of Achan. And you remember Achan is the one, when they destroyed Jericho, that Achan took some of the possessions, some of the gold and things. And that caused them to lose that battle to Ai. And many of the people of the children of Israel died because of Achan's sin. Here's the thing. What hurts one will hurt us all. The children of Israel are saying, look, we're a group of people. And if you start sinning, God will punish all of us. We're connected. We're a family. There's a lot to be said for that as well. You see, the western tribes are going to show righteous zeal for the Lord. They're going to do what's right. They want to stop them from sinning. You know, we need to remember that as a church, we're a body. We're a family. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 talks about the various parts of the body, the eye and the hand and the leg and foot, various things that we have. And how when one member suffers, all suffer. And when one member rejoices, all of us should rejoice. Paul in Romans 12 says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Here's the thing. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. You see, they're concerned that their sin is going to cause great repercussions for the whole nation. Sometimes we think as Christians, and we live in a country that places a great emphasis on individuality. And we as a church, and as we even think about personal salvation, and I certainly want to emphasize that yes, we need to be saved, and that's a personal thing between us and our God. But sometimes we emphasize those things so much that maybe we forget that we're connected, that we're a body, and that what Josh Ketchum does affects you, and what you do affects me because we're a part of the church. And when one hurts, all hurt. And yes, we're not always perfect at this. We're not always the best at showing love. But that's our goal. That's our aim. And that's what we try to do as the body of Christ. And when one sins, it affects others. And here's the thing. And the challenge of when we get into sin or our brethren get into sin, there's two areas that people can move to. They can move to one extreme. When we address sin, we can either act, we must avoid these two extremes. One extreme would be doing nothing at all. The tribes could have said, well, they're going to build an altar, they're going to worship God, that's their choice, let them do what they want to do. Sometimes we want to do that, don't we? Just do nothing at all. But we can't do that. We've got to have concern for our brother who's in sin. We've got to love them and try to win them and talk to them about their sin. The other problem is, and this is what this story is talking about, we also can make wrong assumptions and make some blind statements and choices about our brother's sin. If you saw me out building a grill, what would you think I was going to make a grill for? You would think I'm probably going to have a barbecue, right? Josh is making him a grill. He's going to have a barbecue. Why did they think they were building an altar? What do you do on an altar? You sacrifice things on an altar, right? They built a replica of the altar in Jerusalem. It's an exact same copy. What do they think they were going to do with it? Well, use it. What you might not know is, I might actually be building that grill to sell it. I might be building that grill for a family member. It may not be my grill. You don't really know for sure until you talk to me and say, Josh, why are you building the grill? Are you going to build that grill to barbecue on it, or are you going to sell it? But they made the assumption they're building the altar because they're going to offer some sacrifices on it. They acted blindly. But they at least acted. This caused a great conflict. They made some wrong assumptions. Let me pause here. Before we move on and talk about communication, one of the greatest struggles that we can have in our families involve these conflicts, just like this story. A conflict over some issue And it often involves wrong assumptions, doesn't it? Well, they didn't come to my Christmas party. I thought they liked me, but they didn't come. Well, we had a baby shower, and they didn't bring a gift to that shower. Or that was a visitation for my dear family member. And for whatever reason, that elder wasn't there. And we often make wrong assumptions on those things, don't we? And you can think about it, or in a marriage relationship. Well, we have this assumption about what we think about this spouse, and we get upset. And so much of our conflict comes with assumptions we make. Sometimes they're right assumptions, sometimes they're wrong assumptions. But a lot of tension, a lot of anxiety, a lot of problems come, a lot of conflict comes because of our assumptions we make. Now notice, what do we learn from this story? Is that we need to have some communication. We need to talk things out. They gathered for war, but notice, when they gathered for war, and all of Israel had gathered, they were going to destroy these people. In verse 21, they begin to talk to them. And the eastern tribes say this. Verse 22, "The mighty one, God the Lord, the mighty one, God the Lord, He knows, and let all Israel itself know. If it was in rebellion or in a breach of faith against the Lord, do not spare us today. For in building an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if we did so to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings on it, may the Lord Himself take vengeance." Verse 24, "No, but we did it from fear." Why did they build the altar? They built it out of fear. Fear of what? Fear, continue to read, "that in time come your children might say to our children, 'What have you to do with the Lord, the God of Israel?' For the Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between us and you and the people of Reuben and the people of Gad, and you have no portion in the Lord. So your children might make our children cease to worship the Lord. Therefore we said, 'Let us build an altar, not for burning offering or for making sacrifice, but to be a witness between us and you.'" What's going on in this text? The main emphasis here is that these tribes are not doing a breach of faith, but rather they are loyal to God. In fact, they built this not because they want to break away from the Western tribes, but because they want unity and perpetual unity with them. How many times in your life can you think back on, and most we've probably forgotten a number of them, have you assumed something and got upset about it because of some issue, because you thought they were doing something to you? But when you talked to them about it, you really came to understand that it was not the case at all. That really you had a common goal. You see, these Western tribes and Eastern tribes actually have a common goal: to be loyal to God and to be united. Unity is at the heart of this text. What are both tribes, what are all the tribes wanting? Unity. You know, here's the thing. When we think about communication and understanding one another, they built out of fear of losing their unity and connection with God. So many of the things we do come out of a motivation of fear. We're afraid of something. These tribes were afraid they were going to lose their relationship with these other tribes. They were afraid they were going to lose their connection, and that in their future generations, their kids would be cut off. So they built an altar as a memorial, as a witness, so that when they saw it, that would be a witness, a reminder that, no, we have an altar just like that in Jerusalem that we're supposed to go use. You know, many times when I get upset with someone, we need to ask ourselves the question. We need to ask them, what's the real issue here? What's going on? What's causing the fears? What are you afraid of? And many times it may be what I'm afraid of that's causing the issue. It's the fear of losing the unity, the fear of losing the relationship, the fear that their children will be cut off that motivated them. And so when these Western tribes, hear that we've got the same goal, this is really good. What saved it? Communication. Communication. We must communicate to understand one another. Communication is often hard, but think about how in this case it saved thousands of lives. It saved the wrath of the Lord, and it preserved the unity of the children of Israel. Communication that is open and honest and seeks to understand fears. When you think about this story, you realize that they did this. It's mentioned a couple times. The last verse of the chapter mentions it again. They built this as a witness between us. This is about unity. I want you to turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4 as we bring this to a close. I've got two other New Testament passages. One will be on the screen. One is in Ephesians 4. I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. How do we maintain unity? The goal of the children of Israel at this time was to maintain unity in your marriage, in your family, in your work environment, and especially in the church. If we're going to maintain unity, we have to keep the lines of communication open. We have to try to understand one another. We have to give each other grace and mercy. And we have to try to consider the other person's perspective and understanding, and understand their fears and their perspective. And yes, if you were on the other side of the river and you were afraid that you were going to be cut off, then you would probably build an altar too. There's a reason of why they did what they did. Try to understand one another so that unity can be preserved and there can be peace. And then one last passage. Matthew chapter 5. I put this on the screen. Jesus says this: if you're offering your gift at the altar, or you're at worship, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. I say to you, you'll not get out till you pay the last penny. Here's the point of that passage that I want to emphasize. Whenever there is a false assumption on your part or somebody else's part, whenever there's a misunderstanding, try, if it's possible, to resolve it as soon as possible. Because the longer it goes, the deeper it goes, the deeper the rift becomes, whether it's in your home, in your family, at work, or at church. The deeper it goes, the more days, the more months, the more things that are said, the more emails that are sent, the more texts that are given, the longer it goes, the harder it is to reconcile. And what Jesus says here is, he says, when you realize there's a problem, go to that brother quickly. Go to him and work it out. Communicate then. Try to work it out, lest it gets worse. And it can get so bad that it even cannot be reconciled. And you'll have to pay every penny. And you'll be living with that for years. So try to do it quickly. Think about our story. When those children of Israel, they were ready to war. We're going to go to war. But they said, hey, what are you doing? And they explained what they were doing. And those words saved thousands of lives. Because they dealt with the issue quickly. Let's communicate. You know, I don't give this sermon. Sometimes when we preach a sermon like this, we think, well, there must be something going on in the church. What's Josh talking about? Because I don't know. Well, let me tell you, I don't know what's going on either. There's nothing going on that caused me to give the sermon. actually got the sermon from an idea of our West Kentucky Bible School when Mark Ray was teaching through this text. So don't think I gave this for any specific issue. But I gave this sermon because it's an issue that we always need all the time in our homes, in our church. Because we always have to be seeking to endeavor to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Because if we ever quit trying to maintain it and we lose it, then we'll be sent to the judge and we'll have to pay every penny. And it's a horrible thing when there's division and jealousy and conflict and fighting. And a lot of lives can be lost. So let's maintain the unity in the bond of peace. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, do that this morning. We'll help you. We'll study with you. Do whatever we can to help you become saved. If you need to rededicate your life, come us together. We stand and sing.